Welcome to a special episode of Reliability Matters, recorded live at IPC Apex Expo, thanks to my friends at Scoop TV. You may hear some background noise as I'm not in my usual studio, rather, I'm on a busy and rather loud trade show floor. Today, we are bringing back two previous guests, Phil Zorro and Jim Hall of ITM Consulting. Phil and Jim host Board Talk, a popular broadcast where they field assembly-related questions and provide answers in a style only they can deliver. We'll discuss how they go about fixing their customers' problems and their new upcoming book, Troubleshooting Electronic Assembly, Conversations from the Board Talk Crypt. All of this and more next on Reliability Matters.
Welcome to Reliability Matters, a podcast for the electronic assembly industry. Each episode covers topics related to reliability, best practices, and environmentally responsible assembly techniques with insights from experts across the electronic assembly industry. Now, here's your host, Mike Conrad.
Well, welcome Phil Zorro and Jim Hall to the podcast. Thanks for once again being my guest today. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure being here.
It's especially a good pleasure to be here at Apex.
Yes, and thanks to my friend and colleague, Phil Stoughton, at the Scoop TV booth for letting us be interlopers and record our podcast here at the show. So if you do hear any background noise, that's what you're hearing. You're hearing the revelry of
millions of excited people spending gazillions of dollars on new equipment and materials.
Well, as we've said in a prior episode, and I don't think any of that has changed, you guys are principals at ITM Consulting, so you are consultants. So I have a way to describe a consultant, and I mean it as a term of endearment. So a consultant is someone who's hired to tell their customer what time it is, and the first thing the consultant does is borrow their watch, right? In other words...
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like that. You hit it right on the head, Mike.
In other words, the answers are always right there. They're not something that you necessarily bring to the table. You find the answers right in front of the customer. They just couldn't see it, right? Because they were looking in the wrong place. Is that...
Very, very accurately put.
Or looking in the wrong way.
Looking in the wrong way, already have a preconceived notion, don't want to know what the problem is, have a fear of what it might be, and so they don't want to look in there, right?
That's basically true. And it's happening. I guess you could almost say it's symptomatic of the industry these days, Mike, in a sense we've, for lack of a better word, devolved to where we have this talent gap, expertise gap. And I think we might have touched on it last time, our last podcast, that you know, we certain things were catalysts for it, like the recessions of 2001, recession of 2008. And we've lost a lot of experienced talent that knew that, not only knew that, but helped develop those processes in the first place. And those of us are still here that haven't gone into IT or retired or died of lead poisoning or got hit by a bus, we're getting fewer and fewer. And so that knowledge base isn't there for us. So I guess they could be forgiven in a sense for not knowing in the first place, but there's still that knowledge gap there. Yeah.
Sure. I mentioned Phil Stoughton's name earlier. Sorry.
I was going to say another thing is that I don't think we advertise ourselves as an industry to potential new people coming in. You know, where manufacturing doesn't have a really good buzz in today's world. And we're not, you know, dirty, smoky manufacturing. It's kind of, I think, exciting to be in an electronic assembly facility with all the computerized equipment and the neat process things that are going on.
Yeah, when we build very specific types of equipment. We're part of the electronic assembly food chain and in cleaning. And no one, you know, I always used to dread when I'd go to a cocktail party or something on vacation to a resort and I'm in the spa and the guy next to you goes, "Oh, buddy, what do you do for a living?" Oh, God, no, please don't ask. Because if I told him the truth, he'd be killing himself, right? Or he'd find another spa. So what I'm cognizant of that. So when we have new employees that come in, say an assembler or something, they're not really aware of the industry in its totality. So whenever we get an order, we actually have a bulletin board that we post the company that ordered the machine and what they do and what they build. Because they may have never heard of the company, but they recognize the product, right?
Yes.
And I don't think you can be within, unless you're in some remote island somewhere. And even then I question whether you could be more than 10 feet away from an electronic device.
Absolutely.
And just in this trade show floor, it's a big trade show floor. Every single product that has an electronic function is made by one of these people or all of these people here. I mean, this is it. If everyone on this floor would have disappeared tomorrow. There'd be no electronic production for the next 25 years.
Absolutely. It's you know, it's funny you mentioned that, you know, Mike. It's really funny when people ask you, what do you do? And you say, well, electronic manufacturing, you know, like circuit boards. Oh, circuit boards, like in computers and so forth. Yeah, great. I'm having troubles with Windows 10. Can you help me? I go, no. I can tell you how to manufacture a computer and how to build one, but I can't. I get the circles of death too. So
you know what? When I say it's my job to make sure that you can drop your cell phone 50 times and it still works.
Right.
That catches people's attention.
Right. Said, you know, right.
We're putting the pieces together, and we're responsible for the reliability of that cell phone and all the other products you use.
So I've been in the electronic assembly industry now for 35 years, and I'm only 37 years old. So yeah, you know, child labor is a good thing. And my mother, to this day, she's 86. My mother, to this day, tells her friends, "Yeah, Mike makes computers." That's what Mike does. He makes computers. So me and Steve Jobs, right, and Bill Gates, we make computers together. Right? Yeah. I mean, electronics or computers. That's it.
It's basically, my own kids have no idea what I do. You know, I say, well, I have to fly off to Taiwan tomorrow. I think they assumed I was with the CIA. I wish.
Dad works for an agency.
Can't talk about it.
It's a government job. Exactly. So ITM Consulting is a company that consults, and you're in the electronic assembly space. So you tell people what's going wrong. Is there a frequent cause? The reason why people call you, is it like answering the phone and you can almost answer the question before you hear the question?
Yeah, sometimes we try not to, because you know it interrupts our revenue scheme. Although we have been,
you have to get their credit card number first.
Yeah, we've been known to do that. We've seen that. It's I'll let Jim comment as well.
I think defects with particular assemblies. I'm trying to build this assembly and I can't make it work right. Realistically, it usually comes down to a solder joint soldering issue somewhere, but it could be something else.
Yeah. But there's a hierarchy, or lack of a better word, that they go through before they pick up the phone and call the consultant. And pay attention out there, kids, if you're thinking of becoming a consultant. The first, we call the four levels, okay?
The first thing you have to do is add 40 years to your age, right? Because
thank you.
Yes. I really don't want a 20-year-old. No offense to 20-year-olds. I don't want a 20-year-old consultant, right? I want someone that's been around the block a few times.
Yeah, a little bit with these, you know, tin whiskers and everything. That's right. So the first stage is they have a problem, and you know, first thing is ignore it. Maybe it'll go away. You know, it's the old, as a car talk guys used to like to say, putting electrical tape over the check engine light, or if you're getting weird sounds in the wristband, turn the volume.
Turn the radio up.
Radio. Yeah. Right. So that's the first one. But then DEFCON 2, you're getting to the point where it's starting to make some significant noise. You know, management's starting to notice. Maybe escapes to the customer. So now it's getting serious. So the first trick is, you know, you try to fix it yourself. Well, hey, we're engineers. What we're supposed to do. And I got to tell you, you know, I have varying successes when I try to fix home products. You know, hey, I can solder, sort of. But plumbing projects are a disaster with me. But anyway, they try to fix it themselves. That's DEFCON 2. DEFCON 3, if they can't fix it themselves, then they try to get it fixed for free. Okay, so first place you call is your vendor. And, you know, it's nothing like calling, my cleaner vendor to say, why am I getting tombstones? Or my printer vendor, why am I getting contamination? You know, but it doesn't always work out. So then the next step is, find your resources, okay? And it used to be magazines, proceedings. Nowadays, it's the internet. We all know if it's on the internet, you know it's true. So, yeah.
Clearly.
And finally, DEFCON 4, that doesn't work. Call a consultant. And then they want you to come in.
So you're the last resort.
Yeah, absolutely. Fix it fast, hurry up, don't want to pay you a lot of money, and what, you can't be here tomorrow, what's the problem? So, but hey, we love what we do. Wouldn't be doing anything else.
So you love what you do so much, you've decided to memorialize much of what you've done in a book that's coming out. So for those in our audience that aren't aware, for few people who aren't aware, you host it's not really a podcast, but it's a show, right? I mean, people write in and ask questions, and you record audibly your answers and put it out on the internet. And that's called Board Talk. Now, you referred earlier to Car Talk, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, right?
That's correct.
The NPR, I think it's now defunct. Someone passed away, but this, the NPR Car Advice Show.
Right.
And they had, they broadcast out of Boston.
Yes.
Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Our fair city. Yes, exactly. They had all the shtick. Louie and Dewey.
Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
Dewey, Louie. Yeah, these young kids are going, what are they talking about, right? Yeah.
What's NPR?
But you can walk around Harvard Square and still see Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe in the office windows.
Oh, that's funny. That's great. So you've taken over a number of years. You've taken a lot of questions and then provided the answers for those people and your audience. And you've generated a book kind of based on all that that board talk experience, right? And that book is called Troubleshooting Electronic Assembly, Wisdom from the Board Talk Crypt. So tell me a little bit about some of the skeletons in that board talk crypt. I want to hear some of your favorite stories. Obviously, protect the guilty, you know. We'll just call the offending company, you know, Acme Electronics, right? So tell me some of the things that Acme Electronics have done that just make you laugh.
Well, Mike, we thought we'd start with some cleaning issues.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Is Windex a good material to use to clean my circuit boards?
I prefer 409.
Mr. Clean.
The other Mr. one Clean. Was baking soda scrub.
Yep.
Will that hurt my old electronics when I'm trying to refurbish them? So those kinds of things come up.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And of course, you know, again, we get into the other, you know, foibles, for lack of a better word, like people, you know, that we emphasize the fact there is no such thing as selective cleaning, at least not yet. And, you know, as it's been said, you're not removing unless there's a wrench, you're not removing it, relocating it. But
right.
We're so slow on that.
Contamination redistribution,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One of my favorites was we're repairing these boards for another company. It had silicone conformal coating on, and we're going to fix the repairs with acrylic. Will there be a compatibility issue between the acrylic and the silicone? And the idea of asking, why was there silicone on there?
Why was there silicone?
And is acrylic
so they want to
okay?
coat over
Never
silicone.
Never answered the question.
Yeah. Yeah, something tells me everything will be successful unless a 0.5 mile an hour wind goes across and takes off the new coating, right?
Right.
Or when the temperature that silicone was supposed to withstand is not going to be withstood by the
other material. It's the lowest common denominator. That's the problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we see a lot of that. We get a lot of frequent questions along that line. No one wants to clean, so they want to do everything else, which the totality of the energy and the money that they put into not cleaning far exceeds cleaning in that case.
Right.
So people just don't want to do things, and they want to fix things, and they don't want to admit there was a problem. They just want it to go away, which is probably one of the values that you bring, although you'd bring a greater value if you told them how to prevent it in the first place, which I'm sure you do.
We try.
Whether they want to hear that is another story, right? Sometimes you guys are just the guys in the back, the rescue people.
Yeah, and don't shoot the messenger. Thank you very much.
Yeah, right. So tell me some of your favorite, other than cleaning, tell me some of your, let's start with this. What is the most common type of issue that you hear? You know, everyone thinks it's unique to them. I'll just throw out as an example, voiding, because that's kind of a poster child issue right now, right? With bottom terminated components. Is it voiding or is it something else that, you know, that when the phone rings, there's probably a 2/3 chance it's going to be this?
Well, it's funny, you know, the one that comes most to my mind, you know, certainly in recent years, ironically back to cleaning, is flux entrapment. And it could be either from the use of using a no clean with a aperture pallet and wave soldering, and they're not fully activating the flux that's gotten underneath it. Or it could be flux entrapment because it didn't properly profile board, and it's either under the heatsink of a BTC or the heatsink of a D-pack, and we see a lot of that. And I'd say that's one of the more common fire calls that we get.
And that's a 2-for-1 problem. You get an extra issue for free, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have a flux entrapment problem on a BTC, you probably have a voiding problem. And because the lack of outgassing causes voiding, the lack of outgassing causes activators to stay under the part and create electrochemical migration parties all over the board. So you kind of get a 2-for-1, right? If you can come up with a mechanical means to channel out the flux gases and allow them to escape, you will get much fewer, if any, voiding, and you will allow the fluxes to be removed or properly volatilized so that they're not harmful anymore. You know, it really is a 2-for-1 issue.
Yeah, it really is. And then you didn't profile properly. So, you know, it's going back to a root cause there. And yeah, it's
Well, if you follow the proper profile, it takes too long for the first board to come out of the oven, right? And they have production to do. So they got the whole soak thing. Let's just eliminate the soak and let's just go right up and right down like a Magic Mountain Six Flags roller coaster.
It's hot, the solder melts, and it's soldered. Yeah, it's
instantly cooler.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah, one. That board was pretty close to the other one. Let's do that. Or one of Jim's favorite, using a bare board to profile.
I was just going to say that. We profiled it with like 10 bare boards in a row, and it was consistent. Can't figure out why it changed when we put a bunch of components on it.
That's true. But another thing in terms of a general topic that surprised us when we took a step back and looked at the history of board talk was how many wave soldering questions there are. You think of that as an old technology, but Phil has a theory about that.
Well, the fact that the knowledge gap, you know, we were talking about before, those people, you know, as I said, went off to, sell real estate or, you know, when became IT consultant or something like that, and nobody's really replaced him. And if we look at in the whole thing in the industry in a whole, I think there's two fundamental problems, alluding to one of your earlier, you know, queries. One, it doesn't seem to be glamorous to be an engineer anymore. I don't know if it ever was, but it certainly isn't now. Oh, it's much better to be a hedge fund manager. And I think, as we mentioned in the original podcast, you know, so a lot of these financial institutes are actually recruiting on engineering schools because they know engineers understand math.
And problem solving.
And problem solving and thinking logically. Yep, logic. So that's that. What limited amount we have, that's kind of robbing us from it. And the other thing is, as far as the actual operators, the hands-on people, I think part of the solution then is more vocational colleges and things along those lines. Because
I'm a big proponent of, we've forgotten about trade schools, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So we're
absolutely
producing engineers and lawyers and business majors, but we're not producing electricians and plumbers and things that we need.
And the companies who hire you aren't willing to train you. When I graduated from engineering school in 1970, ladies and gentlemen,
that's before the internet.
Would come and ask me and talk to me and with the idea that they would hire me they would move me around the company for a year or two, and then we sit down and decide what division I wanted to work in, what kind of job, and what training would be required. And they would commit to train me, and I would commit to work for them for most of my life. And there was that unwritten bond, and the companies provided the training. Well, that bond is broken now,
right,
with subcontracting and so forth. And the question that we haven't yet, in my opinion, to answer is, who's going to pay for that training? Am I going to pay for my own training, hoping that you're going to give me a job and pay me a lot of money? Or are you going to train me, hoping me I'm not going to run down the street and make more money from my competitor?
Different world today.
But I
definitely believe we need to see a return to trades and give kids an option. And when you graduate a trade school, at most you're 20, 30 grand in debt. You're not $100,000 or $200,000 in debt, right?
Very much so.
And you're working in 2 years and not necessarily 4 or 6 or 8 or whatever. So definitely this country can use in its manufacturing, you know, more than just engineers. Nothing wrong with engineers. We need engineers, but we also
technicians.
Need people that
skilled
engineers
technicians.
Can direct and exactly skilled technicians. So what's our next big industry? You know, we're talking about industry 4.0. We're talking about 5G, AI, artificial intelligence, IoT, which I have a whole crazy theory about IoT. It's like we do things because we can, not necessarily because we should or provides any value.
Technology for technology's sake.
Technology for technology's sake, exactly. And now it has to work in a harsh environment. But anyway, not going to beat that dead horse anymore. What do you see as our... Are we in an evolutionary time or a revolutionary time in electronics?
I would say evolutionary. And you know, we kind of smirk sometimes when we hear industry 4.0, because from our observations, a lot of the industry isn't even at an industry 3.0 yet. So you're worried about, you know, moving on. I think it's
right. Machines don't talk to the customer, much less to each other.
Exactly.
At the moment.
Yeah. Understand that?
Well, my feeling is, in addition to the communications issues, there's just some additive processing has been on the fringe. They were talking about building additive circuit boards when I entered the industry 30 years ago. It never happened. We're getting closer now. And it's being driven by fine line circuitry, which additive processing give you. So in the PCB world, yes, I see that we're definitely moving to semi-additive and additive processing, as opposed to subtractive processing, you know, print and etch, as
right.
We built most of the circuit board. So that is a big thing. Also, in terms of 3D building for 3D printing, there are possibilities that could really transform things. We don't know yet. There's great possibilities. We haven't worked out what's going to be economical in the long term for a particular high volume, small volume, sure. makes sense. But those are potential disruptors that could change the way we do things significantly in the next 5 to 10 years.
Sure. I see a lot of electronics going into industries that formerly did not have any electronics in them. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking of, like a toothbrush. You know, there are now toothbrushes that are connected devices that will communicate with a smartphone and tell mommy and daddy how long Jimmy and Judy brush their teeth for. They probably have accelerometers in them, so it knows, you know, how vigorous of a brushing they got and things like that. And I would imagine most of the manufacturers of toothbrushes have no experience at all with electronics. I have experience. I was hired once as an expert witness in a civil litigation matter where a company with no manufacturing experience decided they wanted to build an electronic device, hired a contract manufacturer, gave them a statement of work that was very poorly defined. And it was it was basically a race to the bottom. They didn't follow any best practices. And then 50,000 units failed and they sued each other. And people like me and others got to make a bunch of money telling them what went wrong, right? And they didn't want to really fix the problem. They just wanted to know who to properly blame, right? So that's an example of jumping in, you know, with eyes wide closed, right? And not really understanding the whole process. So how can customers reach out to folks like yourself, not when there's a problem, but before there's a problem? Have you contemplated, or do you offer a kind of a fundamentals program where they can hire you or any other kind of, I don't mean specifically your company, but is there a resource that people can go to, companies, not just people, to kind of learn the basics if they're new to this project? Even if they're hiring talented people, they still need to watch over them. Someone needs to be the gargoyle on the edge of the building, making sure that the advice they're getting is accurate. Is that with so many new companies entering the electronic space and with so many new people entering the electronic space, it seems like that's a need. Have you guys thought about that, or do you offer that?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We address it. And I guess they do products, for lack of a better word, services we offer. First of all, we do a lot of training in our work. We have been offering for the past year or so a boot camp. And it's exactly intended for those newbies coming on board. Plus, we've had a lot of people take it that want to fill in the gaps, that kind of thing. So we're very proud of the boot camp. And it's, again, because that isn't supplied vocational colleges and stuff, let's get them familiarized with the processes. I mean, IPC is great for, J Standard 01 and 610 and all that. But what about the processes? What's going on? What is cleaning? What is soldering? Things along those lines. So that's one. And of course, then we have best practices as well. And of course, the other area you're mentioning, as far as the service, is one of the staples that we, ITM was established on, was our process audit. And granted, it's one of our first, tools that we implement when we're doing troubleshooting, which is a lot of what our consulting is. But also occasionally, and it just makes our hearts flutter, we're invited in by a company as a kind of, think of it as a wellness check. Yeah, things are going okay, but we know we can do better. I know where yields can be better. Give us a process audit, benchmark what we're doing, make recommendations how we can do better. I dare say, Mike, we don't get enough of those, but it's something that's there, and we love doing it.
Mike, one example that's started already and ongoing is LED lighting. You have a company, I've made light bulbs and lighting fixtures for 50 years, but now I've got to make an LED light. And a LED light is not a bulb. It is a little electronic circuit. So we've worked in a number of companies where we've had to start from scratch with the basic training and also take them right through to a very high level of void-free soldering.
Yeah, I have a soapbox that I could bring with me and stand on it and just go off for hours on LED lighting. I was a big proponent of LED lighting back when a bulb was, $20 or something, but the promise was they'd last 20 years. So I'm like, okay. And, most of those had to be replaced already because they start flickering because, they don't thermally dissipate, all the stuff that they've learned.
It's because they have voids in their solder joints.
Voids in the solder joints and the wrong materials that oxidize when they put them in a dirty environment. All this stuff, right, that causes them to flicker. And I've had, I definitely have a issue with a lot of LEDs and I've been turning them over. Now I'm actually saving my receipts and putting on the receipt where I put it because I'm now taking them back because they are still pricey. But I want to give one more plug for your book, Troubleshooting Electronic Assembly, Wisdom from the Board Talk Crypt. That's going to be out soon?
Yes.
You keep threatening this.
I know. Threats are everything. Hopefully within the next month. And we're obviously really looking forward to it.
And how are customers going to be able to buy it?
It should be available through hopefully the SMTA bookstore, through the IPC. We hope they're reviewing it right now. And it'll also be available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble, assuming they're still in business, and all the other book-selling venues out there. But we understand it'll definitely be on Amazon.
Excellent. Well, Amazon's always a good go-to if you can't find it anywhere else. Probably it's nice to buy it from SMTA because it supports our trade organizations here. But if you can't find it there, Amazon, it'll be out soon. Check for it. I know you guys well enough to know that the material in that book is going to be both informative and hilarious.
Entertaining. That's right.
And it's not often.
We learn through entertainment. Absolutely.
And it's a fine line because it's very uncommon to have the content that we talk about in this industry be entertaining. Mm-hmm. It usually is in the almost a prescription category of Ambien, right? The information in our industry. So it's nice that you guys have the ability to make it fun.
Well, Phil has the basic principle that we take ourselves way too seriously. We're doing neat stuff, but we take ourselves way too seriously. And it's really valuable to laugh at ourselves a little bit. Yeah.
Absolutely. If other people are going to laugh at you, you might as well laugh at yourself.
That's right. And then we're not laughing at you. We're laughing with you.
Right.
Nope, laughing at you.
Yeah. A little bit of both maybe, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, Phil Zaro and Jim Hall, thank you so much for being my guest today in Reliability Matters. And my return guest, that's twice now. I really appreciate it. And we'll check back with you. We'll give your book a few months to get out there. And then if you're, not doing Jimmy Fallon and all the other late night shows, maybe you can come back online.
Thank you very much. We think the book will be very informative and at worst case makes a good doorstop too.
And we think it's really the first book on troubleshooting for our industry.
Yeah, good. All right. So if you can't do it right, buy the book.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thanks, guys. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's another episode. Thanks for listening to the Reliability Matters podcast. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to Reliability Matters on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcast. Reliability Matters and other reliability-based podcasts are available at Circuit Assembly's PCB Chat at pcbchat.com and at Ascendo Reliability at reliability.fm. Thanks for your comments. Please keep them coming. Send comments and episode suggestions to Mike at mikeconrad.com. That's Conrad with a K. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep doing it right.
Thanks for listening to the Reliability Matters podcast. Join us on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month for new episodes of Reliability Matters.